Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of the Ball 5 podcast, the baseball podcast that is still trying to find a way to play the game Silent Hill 2 on the PS2. If you have a copy, please let me know. It is incredibly difficult to find. My name is DJ Lopes. I'm one of your hosts, and joined alongside me is my other host, Chris. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm not trying to play Silent Hill. I'm very fine with not doing that. I'll watch people play. I do like watching spooky games on Twitch. I love that. But I can't play it.
I'm just going through this thing right now where, like, every October I have this tradition with myself where I try to play a spooky game, and then more often than not, I quit within the first, like, 10 minutes of playing because I'm a coward. So for the last 2 years, it was Amnesia, which, if you're unfamiliar, is a very kind of scary game. You have no way to help yourself or defend yourself or anything, and stuff's chasing you. Didn't vibe with it. This year I'm trying Resident Evil 4. It's a bit less horror-focused, a bit more action, but I'm still so bad at it. And it's making it even more scarier than it has to be. But regardless, this is not a video game podcast as much of nerds Chris and I are. This is a baseball podcast, and this is actually a pretty big baseball podcast episode because we are finally reached the World Series. I know we kind of didn't really do an episode for the ending of the Division Series and Championship Series, but that's what happens when you record on a weekly basis. We were going to record on Sunday, but we realized that both of the series could end by the time we even get the episode up. So we didn't want to go through.
And they both ended that day.
Yes, and then they did indeed both end that day. So we didn't want to do that. So I guess we can kind of just briefly recap how they went. So in the time that we have since recorded, the Guardians lost to the Yankees. Oh, that was so long ago. There was the rainout that pushed the game back, allowed Nestor Cortes to start in Game 5. The Guardians still won with Aaron Civale. I agree with the decision because it may not have been good tactically, but Shane Bieber was just coming off of an arm injury and probably didn't want to rush him on short rest just to, you know, maybe even have the same exact thing happen to him because he comes out and he's not fresh. We missed the Astros and Mariners play 2 games in 1. The Mariners fans wanted multiple games at home in their playoff run and got it all in one game. That one, I would say, I'm trying to figure out which one is more entertaining between the 15 innings Guardians Rays one and the 18 inning Mariners Astros one. I think it's the Mariners Astros one because both of them were masterful pitching performances. But the fact that there were two better offenses in Mariners-Astros, and the Astros just kept going down. I believe Yordan Alvarez went 0-for-7 in the game. And then the Mariners have a pretty good offense. Julio had a couple moments that you thought he may have had a walk-off homer, and you thought he may have had he had a great catch in center field to save a run. But that fell short for the Mariners. Great season, though. And then in the NL, we had the Braves and Dodgers both falling. Both 101 teams went down. So we had chalk in the AL, chaos in the NL, and then that led to the NLCS, the championship series in general, which was not too competitive in terms of how deep the games went, but I would say that all of the games were relatively entertaining.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, I think that the games were definitely entertaining, you know, and the Phillies were just good.
Yeah, I think that the Phillies and Padres series was more entertaining in that it was two teams on pretty equal footing kind of going back and forth at it, and the Phillies just had so many exciting moments from the Bryce Harper homer. Rhys Hoskins had a 2-homer game. They had that big game where they scored, I believe it was 10 runs in Game 4 after going down 4 in the first inning, which was super fun to watch, as not fun as it was to recognize that another NL East team was going to make the World Series before the Mets even won a playoff series. It was fun to really watch that game and watch how Citizens Bank Park was going and just the reactions to the Bryce Harper home run in Game 5. And, I mean, that was insane to watch. I think that atmosphere is going to be really cool to watch in the World Series. And it was just kind of the difference between the two winners, because for the Astros it kind of felt like business as usual. Like, they didn't play all that well, I would say, I mean, as far as hitting goes, like, you still had people like Jordan didn't really do too much in the series. Jose Altuve's been a ghost this entire playoffs. He got his first hit in game four. And then it was just really, really good pitching. Really decent, you know, really solid, timely hitting. And, you know, the Yankees not having an closed roof in Houston.
Yep, that's definitely got to be it. You know, I think it's just, it's the closed roof. And this was so annoying to listen to the Yankees this whole time. You know, it definitely really was. Because you kept it, and then going on to them watching videos of the Red Sox beating them is just hilarious to me.
That is one of the funniest stories that I think we may get out of this recent, I believe it's Hal Steinbrenner era of Yankees baseball. There's been a couple kind of crazy stories surrounding the Yankees, you know, just in general, because it's such a supposedly clean-cut organization that tries to run everything traditionally. But they just go through all these, like, corny methods of, you know, motivation. That would be like if Russell Wilson, and I say that because he is also very corny, that'd be like if Russell Wilson went to the Super Bowl this year, which I don't know, with this Broncos team, probably not. It'd be like if he went to the Super Bowl this year and then just said, yeah, man, I watched that 1 yard line play to Malcolm Butler. I just had that on loop in my house leading up to this game. You know, it just motivated me to be a better person.
How many professional athletes do you think do that over and over again? It gives off the energy of, you know, how like whenever a team loses and then loses in a series of anything, you know, Super Bowl, World Series or whatever, and then you have like one person watching the celebration from the other team and they're like, he was ready, getting ready for next year, you know. Like, it has that energy. How many people do you think do that?
I don't know. I can guarantee you that the Yankees were watching that and was like, are you, like, all the players were definitely watching that and then just saying, what are we doing here? Like, I guarantee you that if that is true, that they did show footage of the Red Sox coming back from down 3-0 in 04 to beat the Yankees, I guarantee you none of the players saw that as motivational. And they were all like, are you kidding me? We're all like grown-ass men here. We get paid millions for this. I don't need to watch. You know.
Yeah, that's got to be deflating. Not that any of them were on those teams, but like, that's got to be deflating.
I don't need to watch Paul Quantrill give up a walk-off home run to David Ortiz. But so there was that. I'm pretty sure they had David Ortiz FaceTime Aaron Boone, who, by the way, we just learned today that his job was safe, which is maybe even funnier than anything that we've been going over right now. So we just found out that Boone's job is safe. They FaceTimed in the clubhouse, and I'm trying to think. So back to the roof thing. I think the funniest part about it was that it's not like the Yankees play in a domed environment.
No.
If you were,
I don't get what that was.
If it were the Astros complaining about the Yankees environment being too open air and knocking the ball down, sure, maybe. They play in a domed environment. They're pretty used to the roof. The Yankees play in an open air environment in one of the easiest parks to hit a home run to right field. I don't understand, like, what's going on there. And then the whole talking about exit velos, and I'm, you know, a huge baseball stat nerd. I love going on Baseball Savant. I love going through all this stuff, and I love how analytics has kind of grown the game. But I feel like we've kind of reached a point where there needs to be, and I feel like a boomer saying this, but I feel like we've reached a point where there needs to be some give and take there, where you can recognize that, like, hey, sure, Alex Bregman did hit that ball 91 miles an hour, but he hit it to his pull side, he hit it into the Crawford boxes, which is one of the easiest places to hit a home run in Minute Maid. And, you know, he got around on an inside fastball. That's going to go around. Aaron Judge hit the ball 106 miles an hour. Kind of hit it to a, sort of the power alley in right center. Hit it the other way on a low liner trajectory. Yeah, it landed. And they weren't able to get anything else going. So I feel like at some point you have to just accept that it happened. And be able to witness these, you know, statistical outliers within their context. Because I think that that's the big thing that people are doing. they're taking these advanced statistics and then removing the context from them in, you know, posting them as fact.
Yeah. And I also, I just can't get over the fact that I don't think you as a team can complain about anything when you have right field in Yankee Stadium. You know, like how many times you can see Yankees players just putting a ball in, a big proponent of hitting the opposite way, you know, but just putting a ball over the right field fence, you know, how many times you can see them purposely trying to push any outside pitch over that wall, you know? And I don't understand why that is something that, you know, you can sit there and then complain about the roof being open, you know? And it's just crazy to me.
And to add on to it, it was pretty funny that in game four, Chaz McCormick, who we'll get to later on in the episode, Chaz McCormick, the center fielder for the Astros, hit a home run to right field that would have only been out of right field at Yankee Stadium. Just as like a little extra punch in there. But I think we have gone a little long. I mean, there's no such thing as too long in celebrating a Yankees loss and the ending of a Yankees season and the impending doom of Yankees fandom. But I do think that we have a bigger thing to get to, which is the World Series, obviously. This is between, like we said earlier, the Houston Astros and Philadelphia Phillies. So a quick little brief thing on how both these teams got here. The Astros, 106-56, one of the best teams in baseball all year. Pretty consistent even after losing a guy in free agency like Carlos Correa. Jeremy Peña, the new shortstop for the Astros, stepped right up, completely filled that hole. I mean, not completely, as much as you could fill a hole created by a guy like Carlos Correa, he absolutely did it. And they just got the pitching. They improved a lot in the pitching department, and their pitching is elite, and we'll get to that later. But just dominant, stem to stern, beginning of the season to end, completely controlled the division, never really lost any ground. The Phillies, much more of a roller coaster of the season. Start out 21-29, and I hope that this doesn't become the new start of the season 19-31 and won the World Series like the Washington Nationals. But they start the season 21-29, and then they fire Joe Girardi, and then interim coach Rob Thompson just really gets the team going. I believe they won like 12 or 13 games immediately after firing Joe Girardi, which, if you needed any indictment on the Phillies' managerial tenure of Joe Girardi, then I guess that's it. And then there was kind of a bit, more moments where they started to kind of piss it away in September, but then the Brewers pissed it away even more. And if you go back to that series where the Brewers got swept, I believe, by the Marlins, and really helped the Phillies get into it, it makes you wonder, like, how different is this playoff shaping out if Avisail Garcia doesn't hit a grand slam against the Brewers? But, you know, I don't want to get too into that here, because I do kind of want to, as gross as this is going to sound to say coming from a Mets fan, celebrate the Phillies a little, because they've had a really fun run. They have a really fun team. You know, we mentioned Bryce Harper has been unreal in these posts in this playoffs. Just absolutely demolishing every ball. He's been, I mean, I feel like we talk about it. We've talked about it multiple times when he won the MVP in both of those years. It is crazy how he's had all of this hype and all of these, you know, expectations laid upon him. And he's just completely knocked the ball out of the park, no pun intended, on all of those expectations, and just becoming this absolute superstar that we see a lot of these grand comparisons in sports, and they don't really work out too often. OJ Mayo, I'm pretty sure, was listed as the next LeBron, and he was like a decent NBA player for a little bit, not the next LeBron. So it kind of goes to how unfair we are to, you know, teenage athletes when they're just kind of figuring out if they even want to play the sport, to be honest, and labeling them as the next big thing. But somehow, at like 13 years old and 16 years old, he was labeled as the next big thing and has been the big thing in baseball.
Yeah, he hasn't stopped. I've always been, and coming from someone who has been a fan of rival teams of Bryce's throughout the whole time of his career, you know, I've never fully felt like the hatred towards him, you know. I think the closest I've been was when Noah Syndergaard struck him out in one of the years to like capitalize like the Mets overtaking the lead in the division or something. Like, that was the one time where I was like, let's go against Harper. But I've always been a very big Harper supporter. And it's funny because you say all that, and he's probably, I don't know if it's crazy to say that he's one of the most underrated players, you know?
Oh,
it's
just I feel definitely agree.
Yeah, I just feel like he's just an MVP candidate player every year, and he, you know, isn't treated as such, you know. He's kind of just left as like an aside in these conversations, and he's shown that he is what he is, you know. And I did say, now all of my predictions from the original episodes have gone terribly wrong, but I will say that one of my predictions was that Bryce is going to be, you know, the whole storyline of he's going to be, you know, peeved that that the Nationals won it the year that they got rid of him and stuff, you know. And so I think he's taking this to heart, and he wants to push a team, be that guy, you know.
Absolutely. And it's just the way that he's been able to get this crowd on his side completely. And, you know, Philly, as crazy as their fans are, and they have a pretty solid mission statement of, you know, they're not gonna ride with you unless you give them a reason to ride with you. And I've seen multiple Philly fans that I follow on Twitter, you know, share this sentiment. They're not going to ride with you unless you give them a reason to ride with you. And Bryce has absolutely done it. And this team just all around him has absolutely done it. Reese, Hoskins, and JT Realmuto have had big moments. Even Nick Castellanos, after as bad a year as he's had, has given him a lot of good moments, especially in the NLDS. And Kyle Schwarber in this NLCS had really started to kind of find a stride, hit an absolute tank in game one, 488 feet. It's kind of funny that that has now pushed some of the other incredibly impressive home runs he had in his Cub tenure down the line of most impressive home runs he's hit in the playoffs. He hit a ball into like the Allegheny against Pittsburgh. He hit the scoreboard in right field in Wrigley Field when he was like his first postseason. And now both of those have been moved down because of this home run he hit in Philly. And I mean, not in Philly, in San Diego. And overall, the team has just really performed very well, hit their stride at the right time. We are going to go, the way we're going to break this down is position by position, doing the comparisons. And then at the end, we'll both give our predictions. But first, we are going to go a little bit in depth on the greatest tradition in World Series history, I would say. And that is steal a base, steal a taco. The Taco Bell tradition, where the first stolen base in the World Series, after the first stolen base, all of America gets a free taco. I believe some years they've done the free Doritos Locos taco, some year it's just a regular taco.
Aside, hilarious to me because it's like so cheap. And even Doritos Locos taco, I think it's like $1.29, and it's just like it's so cheap, but
it's just like
America loves free stuff. I'm gonna be honest, I don't think I've gotten this since high school.
I've gotten it like I think I got it once in 20 I think I've got it maybe once in 2020.
And I'm an avid Taco Bell goer, like I go way too often. I haven't done this because I'm just like, I'm not going to drive all over there to get to save a dollar to eat one Doritos Locos taco.
Not even to save a dollar, because it's not like you were going to go to Taco Bell to get a Doritos Locos taco in the first place.
Yeah.
Even if you went, you weren't going to do it. It's just like saying like, oh, it's here now. But it is very funny that is $1.29 to get a taco and even cheaper to make probably. And they were just like, I mean, there's no real loss that we would have to make these free. So if MLB is going to pay us a ton of money, or if we're going to pay some money to do this, then cool. We'll do it. Yeah.
Now, guaranteed, because, you know, again, and I don't want to go too much on this, but you know that you're not just going there to get one taco. You're going to buy a whole meal and then get a free taco.
So exactly.
They're making their money out of this. So
I want to do an oral history on the people that do go to Taco Bell on the steal a base, steal a taco guy and get one singular taco for free and then just leave. But enough about the science and economics of the Taco Bell free taco giveaway. I want to get into some of these people that have stolen bases to give these people their damn tacos. So you kind of ruined my original plan for this by actually looking up the same lyric, by looking up the same article that I did about 20 minutes before we decided to record.
I'll be prepared.
I was going to quiz you on some of the steal a base, steal a taco winners. But I guess we can do just a brief history of some of them. So one thing that I noticed that was pretty interesting is that there have been some gaps in,
yes,
in the steal a base, steal a taco. So, one interesting one I have noted is 2008 to 2012. There was no gap. Now, one of my theories maybe is this was during the time when Michelle Obama had that big school lunch initiative to make stuff healthier. So maybe the MLB on the backs of Michelle Obama's decree to make school lunches healthier, maybe they initiated a complete cease and desist on the Taco Bell Steal a Taco competition because they just didn't want that on a broad scale.
Yep, the liberal agenda.
just to let everybody know, because I feel like it is not, it's A, not guaranteed on a baseball podcast, and B, maybe not something that we have been too clear about. Neither of us are conservatives.
No, we're like going to far right. I'm spinning.
I would like to make that very clear. We are not deep enough into this podcast lore to spin this as a bit.
we are deep enough in deep state, though.
So. I guess, yeah. You're completely right. But so going back to the history of it, the only reason that I kind of remember that Jacoby Ellsbury was the first ever winner of this is that when they did it, I remember, I think I was in like the third grade or something at this point. And I just remember walking home from school. And I think you told me that, like, if we go to Taco Bell and you say Jacoby Ellsbury to the cashier, they're going to give you a free taco. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's so cool. And then I learned about this, but there are actually some interesting ones. So there are some kind of obvious ones, for the time, like Lorenzo Cain, good base stealer. That Kansas City Royals team was big on stealing bases. They were super fast, got a lot of them. And then, Francisco Lindor, superstar in his own right. He's a pretty decent base stealer. Other ones like Trey Turner and Mookie Betts, both pretty obvious. The most recent one was Ozzie Albies, which, yet again, I mean, not necessarily obvious because it's not like base stealing is super prevalent now, which is something I wanted to get into. But I think by far the most surprising one that I saw when I was going through is Jason Bartlett.
Yeah,
in the fifth inning, in the fifth inning of Game 1 against the Phillies, Jason Bartlett, the, I believe, utility infielder for the Tampa Bay Rays. It's not like I'm going to get crucified for getting this wrong, unless Jason Bartlett's family somehow finds this. But Jason Bartlett, utility infielder for the Rays, got the steal. Another one was Angel Pagan in the eighth inning. This one is actually interesting. The eighth inning of Game 2, it took about 17 innings for a steal to happen in that one. So people must have been really, clamoring for their tacos. Exactly. And that kind of leads me to my point, which is there's not been a ton of base stealing, not just in the playoffs, but in baseball in general lately. So will we ever reach a year where there is not a single base stolen during the World Series?
I mean, if there's a year, this can be the year. I did dig up some interesting things, which now I am not the best in my rudimentary research here, so maybe I just did a portmanteau of crude and rudimentary for crudimentary there. But maybe it is not the best, but I did look up all of the games that the Astros and the Phillies have played in. So it's not all of the games in the playoffs so far, but it's all of the games that they've both played in. And there have been 5 stolen bases by those teams. By Yuli Gurriel, Kyle Tucker.
That's an out of left field one. Yuli Gurriel stealing a base.
Wait, that's not even the most out of left field, DJ. Kyle Tucker for the Phillies. So those are the two Astros. There's been three successful four attempts from the Phillies. The unsuccessful attempt was Alec Bohm, who had, I think he ran a little bit this year. He had two stolen bases. So you had that. Gene Segura did steal a base. He had 13 stolen bases, so that works. There is one guy who has two stolen bases this year on the Philadelphia Phillies. Would you care to guess whom that person is? Do you know?
Like two stolen bases just in this run? Or
in this series. I mean, in this run.
Is it JT Realmuto?
Nope.
It's Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber got a steal there.
Kyle Schwarber has two stolen bases, so he has the most stolen bases in these things. And then just to round it out, the other ones were Julio Rodriguez and Michael Harris stole bases. So only two players, one from the Mariners and one from the Braves, that stole against either of these teams. So there have not been a lot of stolen bases this between these two teams, and Kyle Schwarber is the person. If Kyle Schwarber gets America freaking taco,
they should give you nuts. They should give you multiple tacos at that point.
Give you a Kyle Schwarber,
yeah. If Kyle Schwarber steals a base and he's the one to give it to you guys, it should be. You said very crude and rudimentary research on that. That was more research than any human being should have the right to analyze who's going to win the steal a base, steal a taco challenge.
We have to have something that's going to separate ourselves from other podcasts. Now,
exactly.
The people that have the biggest chance on the Phillies would be JT, who has 21 stolen bases. And then going down to players like Gene Segura, Bryson Stott has some, Bryce Harper has 11, Brandon March has 10. I will say, though, Kyle Schwarber does have 10 in the regular season.
I feel like all of those are defensive indifference that the score bookkeeper just decided not to list.
Guaranteed.
So, all right. So that leads us into our last bit on the steal a base, steal a taco before we actually preview the damn World Series. So who was your pick to give the world free tacos?
I'm going to go with Kyle Tucker. He had 25 stolen bases throughout the year. So
all right.
I just think it makes the most sense to me.
I'm going to go with JT Realmuto. I think that for him to be as big of a stolen base threat as a catcher, nonetheless, and it's not like these catchers are going to be super easy to run on. JT Realmuto has a great arm. And, I mean, Christian Vasquez and Martin Maldonado, it's a little iffy on their arms. They're not as great as they once were, but they're both two incredibly smart catchers that know what they're doing and know how to kind of stop runners from going and stuff like that. So, but I think I will go JT Realmuto. He will give us tacos. I will say, I think this will be a game two or three kind of thing. I don't think that we get a stolen base early. I wonder how aware the players are of this.
I don't know. Ozzy Albies made it seem like they were aware. He stole literally the first chance he had.
He's young enough that he's probably been to Taco Bell to nab on one of these deals. So, all right. We are 30 minutes into the podcast, and we are now getting to the actual players in the World Series
and
the comparison. So we're just going to go basically around the horn as you would a scorecard, minus the pitching we're going to get to at last. So we're going to start off with catching. So for catching, it's a little interesting in that the pick on who's better is pretty simple, but there is a bit of a tactical advantage that the Astros could potentially have with this matchup. So we have JT Realmuto, as we just mentioned, for the Phillies, and then the combination of Martin Maldonado and Christian Vasquez for the Astros. Now, the reason I say it's interesting is because I think it's been said a lot about Martin Maldonado's ability to control this rotation and control these pitchers, and he's done a great job of it. I mean, there's a reason why they traded for Christian Vasquez and then just kind of didn't really use him a ton down the stretch. So I think that there's a lot to be said about that and how he can control his staff, but he cannot hit. He's just hasn't been a good hitter. He's had some, decent moments, three hits in this playoffs in total, but he just hasn't had a ton of, he's just not a good hitter, basically. So what this kind of brings is that they've been doing a little bit of late game offensive replacement. Maldonado will catch the first six or seven innings, and then when they need to pinch hit him in a big spot, they'll bring in Vasquez, and they're fine with Vasquez catching the rest of the game, because obviously he's a pretty good catcher. It's not like you're really losing a ton on the defensive end there. But that said, while Vasquez has had his moments, he had a big two-run single, and I think it was game three, to give the Astros the cushion that they needed after Gerrit Cole had just been taken out of the game. But other than that, he only has one other hit. He's hitting 200 in the playoffs, OPS of only 473. So he's been pretty soft hitting since getting traded. So I wonder if he uses that as kind of a pick me up to get going, or something like that. But regardless, I think, you know, you could combine them and probably another third catcher, and you wouldn't get what JT Realmuto can bring, because like we mentioned with his running, he's a great base dealer, a great base runner, a real shock as a catcher to be that fast and that nimble, as well as he brings you the great defense. He has a great arm, and he's been pretty solid at the plate so far this playoffs. You know, nothing too special, about a 716 OPS, but he has 10 hits in 11 games, two home runs, had that crazy inside the park home run, the first catcher to ever hit an inside the park home run in the playoffs. So I guess in general, what's your take on this?
I don't think we need to get too much into it. JT is just by far, because he's also a good catcher, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you not only do you
if
have
he,
an
if
elite...
he were terrible at defense, I think that this gets a little close.
Yeah.
But he's the best catcher in baseball. I think that that's pretty safe to say. It used to be a thing between him and Yasmani Grandal, but especially after this year, Grandal's really fallen off. So, I mean, I guess it is pretty obvious. It's JT.
Yeah.
So I guess we can move on to first base then, which is Rhys Hoskins versus Yuli Gurriel. And I put Trey Mancini here, but I realized that Trey Mancini's been doing more DHing. I think that they did a little bit more of an offense defense during the season with those two. But I think that since Jordan has been playing the bulk of the left field games, that Trey Mancini is now just kind of the DH on this team. So we'll just ditch that Trey Mancini part and go Rhys Hoskins versus Yuli Gurriel. Now, this one, I think, is a little closer, not just because of, you know, pedigree, because Yuli Gurriel wasn't incredible this season. I think over a whole season sample, we would go Rhys pretty easily. But Gurriel's actually been on fire in the playoffs. He's batting 367. Hasn't drawn a single walk or gotten hit by a pitch. That OBP is the exact same as his batting average, but a 933 OPS in all of the playoffs, really kind of helping carry the load of this offense when guys like Jordan or Jose Altuve haven't been hitting as well as they typically do. He leads the team in hits, second on the team in home runs with two, has three RBIs in the playoffs. I guess that's not as impressive, but still. He's doing the work, and as you mentioned, did get a steal, so he'll run on you. But Rhys had his struggles early in the playoffs, still not hitting all that well overall with a 182 batting average, but has had some big moments. He had a two-homer game in the, I believe it was game three, had a game three or game four, had a couple big home runs, had the big home run against Spencer Strider, which really started to get him going after a slow start. And now he's tied for first on the team with Bryce Harper with five home runs. Both of them have five homers, 11 RBIs. And I think I'm still, with as hot as Yuli Gurriel has been, I'm still going to give the edge to Rhys Hoskins. I think he's been picking it up lately.
Yeah, I think I think to me, this is a coin flip. I think it's very much, you know, just right down to the wire on it. I might go Yuli just to have a little bit more consistency and on base percentage, you know, or I guess, like you just said, not really drawing any walks, but getting on base and being there to kind of keep this offense going. But I think it's very difficult to overmine the just home run abilities of Rhys Hoskins and what he's done to kind of put a fire underneath these Phillies. And, you know, he's been right in the middle of their comebacks, and it's not just the fact that he's hitting the home runs, it's the fact that they're big home runs, you know what I mean, and that they are really capitalizing this team. So I think just my baseball mind goes to Yuli Gurriel, just because I like the idea of having some ability to get on base a little bit more. But I can't, you know, overshadow the fact that Reese just hits the ball out of the park. So,
okay, so your final pick, though, between the two,
because I'm picking Yuli.
All right, so you'll go Yuli. All right, so that's our first disagreement there, I guess. So with second base, this one is actually, I think, is maybe the most interesting comparison between the two.
It's extremely funny.
Yeah,
I think.
So we have Jean Segura for the Phillies, who has been all chaos this postseason. I don't know if you saw the stat, but they brought it up after game four that he was the only player in playoff history that had an error, an RBI, and got picked off in the same inning, which is a hilarious set of three qualifiers to throw up on a chiron.
But you knew Philly was going to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Especially during this playoff run. But I feel like it's kind of indicative as to who he is as a player. He's going to have some incredibly electric moments, and then two innings later, just do something dumb at second that's going to make you like say, like, what's going on there? But then, two innings after that, he's going to hit like a three-run double and then completely clear the bases. I like him. He's very electric as a player. I love some of the reactions he has. He had that hit in game one that brought him ahead against the Cardinals back in the wild card. And he did like a little leap running to first base. So I thought that was really fun. Overall in the playoffs, he is batting .257, on base percentage of .316, slugging of .314. Decent, but not incredible. 5 RBIs, 9 hits. So that's Gene Segura's side of the ball. Jose Altuve, on the other hand, has 3 hits all playoffs. And looking at it now, I think that was more than I even thought he had, because I only thought he had 1.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. This has been a very tough stretch. You know, and only one of them was a double, so it's been 2 singles, and I don't know. It's just a tough stretch for Jose.
And the thing about it is that, so he's been, no other way around it, terrible this postseason. And the thing about it is that he's not even getting, like, bad luck stuff happening. He's just having terrible at-bats. He's, you know, he's getting down in the count. He's swinging at pitches way out of the zone, you know, way beyond even what you would expect if someone threw you a nasty slider. He's, you know, just swinging at completely non-competitive pitches. And it's just so interesting to see a guy that has so much playoff pedigree and so many, like, playoff moments to just have this insane cold streak during the playoffs. And you kind of have to believe that it can't possibly keep going on. But as we've seen, I guess it also kind of doesn't matter that he's been so bad. So I think for this reason, I don't think he's going to fully break out of it, but I think he's going to be just a little better. But I would still take I would take Jose Altuve over a whole season, but right now in these playoffs, in this series, I will take Gene Segura.
Yeah, I think you have to go with the what have you done for me lately. I'm going to go Gene Segura too. I don't think it can be overshadowed too. So he was a ghost during San Diego. He didn't really do anything during that series. But he had a very decent series against the Atlanta Braves. You know, he was batted .462 there with a .533 OBP and a .615 slugging. So he played very well against Atlanta there. And I just think that he just gives you, he's going to give you entertainment there, you know. So
how dare you say that he didn't do much when he was the first player in MLB history to have an error get picked off and have an RBI hit in the same inning. Which, so, first off, I'm sorry, I need to go back to that. First off, I don't even know how you pick that stat. I don't even know how you, like, I have a StatHead subscription. If whoever sourced that at Fox got that through StatHead, please let me know how you did that, because I want to know how to cherry pick stats as good as that. And also, they showed it while they were interviewing him at the end of the game because he had those big moments. And it's like, are you showing that to like say like how cool is this? Are you showing that to say that this is bad? Are you showing it to say it's good? Like, what the hell? You could just say he had the RBI hit in the fourth that gave him the lead.
That's a wild thing to say, but whatever. I'm gonna agree with you on this one.
Okay. All right. So moving on to third base, we have Alec Bohm versus Alex Bregman. The battle of who has the cooler end to their first name, from the ALE battles. So that was terrible. I don't know why.
Yeah, thank you
tried
for that, DJ.
No problem.
The same initials. You could have done that.
This is the content that you can expect, that you can come to expect from the Ball 5 podcast. So Alex Bregman, the fun thing that I wanted to bring up that Sarah Langs has posted about, I see Andrew Simon has posted about, and I saw Jeremy from MLB Random Stats post this. Alex Bregman, now I'm doing it, in the ALDS. 16 plate appearances, 5 for 15, walk, double, homer. 333, 375, 600 line. Alex Bregman in the ALCS, 16 plate appearances, 5 for 15, walk, double, homer, 333, 375, 600 line. The first player with the exact same slash line in two series of the same postseason with at least 10 plate appearances. Once again, how you look that up and how you get that exact same thing, I really want to know, because that is a hilarious cherry pick stat. And that was just something funny that I wanted to mention. Overall, he's been pretty solid. The beacon of consistency for the Houston Astros offense. And he has had some pretty big moments. He was a bit, I think, rough during the season. Had some stretches. And he's had a lot of trouble coming back from an injury even last year. That he's still, I think, kind of, you know, getting back from and getting back into the thing. But overall in this postseason, he's been pretty good. You know, one of their top bats in the postseason. And I think that'll probably continue. He's another one of these guys that's been in the playoffs a ton, and we'll just be consistent with that. And then we go over to Alec Bohm, who has kind of struggled, a 532 OPS in the playoffs. Not necessarily a bad player. You know, he just hasn't been quite what he was during the regular season. His defense has been a little improved. I just think in general, I think that the stuff about him being terrible and having that three-error game earlier in the season has mostly blown over, and he's been just fine, like just okay at third, which is really an incredible improvement when you look at the Phillies' defense. So I think he'll take that, but overall I think I'm going to go Bregman. I don't think it's much of a discussion.
Nope, Bregman it is. I think I'm just going to go with the consistency element here, like you said. And then bring up another kind of maybe remember this guy, although this guy was a very good player. Chris Davis, having four straight seasons with the .247 batting average. That's what that reminds me of. So
that one was funny because it needs such a large sample size.
Oh yeah,
like a small sample thing. That is multiple seasons in a row of like 500 plus plate appearances that all lead to the same batting average. And maybe we'll do like a weird cherry pick stats episode in the off season. But to round out the infield, we've got a battle of the rookies. We've got Bryson Stott for the Phillies and then Jeremy Pena for the Astros. Now this one, I think especially with how Jeremy Pena has been in the postseason, probably is not much for discussion, but I did want to show some love to Bryson Stott, who overall in the postseason hasn't been great, a 606 OPS, but he did really have a lot of nice moments, especially towards the end of that Phillies series against the Padres. He had a multiple extra base hit game in game 4, had another double, I think, in game 5, and is overall, I mean, you'd rather have him than Didi Gregorius, which is who you were trotting at a lot earlier in the season. So he's still not the greatest defender in the world. I think that that's why they use Edmundo Sosa a lot, just as kind of a late-game replacement at third and short. But overall, I still really like Bryson Stott. I really like his game. And I think that he will be really solid in the playoffs, but I just don't think that it holds much of a candle to Rhode Island native, Rhode Island proud, Jeremy Pena, who's just been incredible this postseason. A 303 average, 990 OPS, has three home runs, including that big home run in Game 3 of the ALDS in the 18th inning to break the tie. Really has just been, you know, everything you want and more out of a rookie shortstop replacing Carlos Correa.
Yeah, I had always found that it was really funny that you give up someone like Carlos Correa and then you get someone like Jeremy Pena just to kind of come up and do that, you know. Sorry, Bryson. This is Jeremy Pena all the way. Go Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring Bryson Stott up a little bit, because I knew we were both going to go that route, but I did want to show some love to him. He's one of those guys that his stats overall don't really pop off the page to you, but overall he has really picked himself up as a player and improved, and I think that that's kind of the beauty of having a young rookie come up and play a position like shortstop, is that he has this, he has this thing about him where you're going to let him have the growing pains, and then now he gets to be a big-time contributor for a playoff team, and that's super cool. You know, you can give a guy 500 plate appearances on a bad team and he'll develop still, but there's nothing that can replace the idea of playing in the playoffs as development. So I think that's going to be great. I think overall in the long run, it's going to be great for both of these guys to get this experience. So moving on to the outfield now, we have, I would say, another one of the most interesting ones here, which is Kyle Schwarber versus Yordan Alvarez. Kind of the same player in two different fonts. Both are low defense, high power left-handed hitters. Both have had pretty cool moments during this postseason. Kyle Schwarber, I think the big difference between the two is that Kyle Schwarber is a little shorter and Yordan Alvarez is just a huge tank of a human being. This is a very short aside. I don't want to get too deep into it, but I saw somebody post a picture of him when he was like 19 years old, and it was like Yordan Alvarez in 2017. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. And it was like one of those things where like they are clearly insinuating that the dude is doing steroids. Like that is their insinuation. But they have this whole cover of like saying, I didn't say it. I didn't say he's doing them. I just said, look at him. As if a 19-year-old is not supposed to get bigger and stronger with professional, you know, diet and stuff like that. But regardless of that, I feel like Yordan, aside from his two big home runs, now overall in the playoffs he's been solid, 889 OPS, but he's hitting 241, and I feel like overall, aside from his two home runs against the Mariners, he's kind of been a little quiet, just in general. You know, four walks, eight strikeouts, he's fine. He's been pretty good because he's obviously Yordan Alvarez, but nothing incredibly special. And I think the same can be said for Kyle Schwarber, just in general because of how slow he started off in the wild card series and division series. Schwarber's the same kind of deal, hitting 200, but has an 832 OPS, had the three homers in the series. This one's, I would honestly say, kind of tough. I mean, it's one of those things, again, where the decision in general wouldn't be tough. If you were asked for a full season between the two, you would pick a full season of Yordan Alvarez. But I am kind of curious with this upcoming series where these two stack up.
Yeah, it is a very interesting thing to me. The thing that I have to think about is, like, who, I don't want to say contributes the most to their team, but who is the most, who is the one that you can sense the disappearance of the most, you know? And even that is a difficult one to ask, because you're right. Like, Yordan's kind of been quiet other than the home runs that he's had there. He's kind of been quiet, but Schwarber was awful until San Diego, you know? So I don't really know. I think if you go with the what have you done for me lately approach, you go Kyle Schwarber, because his San Diego series was so good. It was so impactful. It really, you know, kind of picked up the Phillies and really helped them through along with Bryce and along with Reese as well, you know. But I think, like you said, you go full season, you have to go Yordan. But I think my pick is going to be Kyle Schwarber. I think that he means more to this Phillies team. I think the Astros can kind of piece things together, but the Phillies need Schwarber to contribute at a high level. So,
yeah, I think I would agree in whose absence you can see a little bit more. And I think it's clear because it's kind of been evident in the postseason. The Phillies didn't really struggle too much when Schwarber was doing bad, but you could tell that there was something missing, and they were getting a lot of help from their pitching. But I kind of feel like Yordan, even when he was struggling, he gets picked up because that lineup, you know, 1-7 is just so dangerous. But I think overall I am going to go Yordan in a kind of almost a sense of water kind of finds its level. I feel like you can't keep Yordan this low during a playoffs for that long. And not to say that Kyle Schwarber is going to be bad in the series. I think that this is why this discussion is so interesting, because they've both been kind of similar, but I would lean towards Yordan in this pick. So let's see. We both went Jeremy Peña and shortstop, and then you're going to go Schwarber. I'm going to go Yordan. And then that brings us over to center field, rather, where we have another platoon. Here for the Phillies, we have Brandon Marsh and Matt Vierling. And for the Astros, we have Chaz McCormick, which, I mean, let's be real here. They're kind of both towards the back end of the lineup players. I mean, all three of them towards the back end of the lineup players. I don't think that you're getting your World Series MVP. And you can quote me if I'm wrong. You can clip this if I'm wrong, but I don't think you're getting the World Series MVP out of either of these matchups. I don't think you're getting the guy that really shifts the series out of either of these matchups. But I mean, just in general, we'll go into it a little bit. Brandon Marsh, good defender, traded over from the Angels in the offseason. Not in the offseason, at the deadline. I believe that was the Mickey Moniak deal. He's been not very great in the playoffs. He'll face righties for them, but he did have that big 3-run home run against Charlie Morton in the division series. I think that was game 4. So, I mean, he's had a moment in the playoffs, and he has a couple doubles in the playoffs, but overall, you know, 13 strikeouts and 26 at-bats, not going to do you too much. And then Matt Vierling is their guy against lefties, but in that shorter sample, still kind of struggled, 2-10, a double, and 4 strikeouts. So overall, like I said, they both play decent defense. I don't think any of them's moving the needle for you too much. Chaz McCormick, he's been actually, you know, pretty solid. 898 OPS, and he had that home run against Garrett Cole that I mentioned earlier. He had another home run in the Yankee series. I believe he had a, not a double, but I think he had a sac fly in that series. So, I mean, like I said, I don't think either of them are moving the needle for you. They're both kind of glove first guys that if you get anything from them at the plate, that's cool. I think overall I'm going to go Chaz McCormick because I think he's very funny, because if you watch him at the plate, he looks exactly like Jose Altuve. He wears the same gear, same high socks, same stance, same swing. Literally, I say this every time I see him, he's doing Jose Altuve cosplay, and he's doing a damn good job of it, because they both look exactly alike when they're up at the plate.
This one's a yawner for me. I'm going Chaz McCormick, nothing else to say there.
Okay. I guess another thing that we can maybe toss out is that sometimes Aledimus Diaz gets some run for the Astros in the playoffs as another late game bench. I think for the bench, just in general, we can just say the Astros. I think they have a little bit deeper of a bench with all those guys that they can bring off. But Diaz has not been great in the playoffs. I just said that because I see his stats right here. But we are going to move on to right field, which is another... I forgot that Bryce Harper's not playing right field. It's Nick Castellanos, so I was going to say another really interesting comparison, but Nick Castellanos, he had his moments. He had a 3-hit game in the Braves series, but since then has significantly cooled off. only a 565 OPS in the playoffs in total. But I will say, I do not know with the current climate of the world how much we can take a Nick Castellanos World Series home run.
Yeah. This is, I think the jokes have always been, this is what we need for Henry Kissinger.
But also that could go completely in the other direction. That could, exactly. Who knows? Like, he's a complete agent for chaos, and like, I don't know. It's really tough to predict. I hope we don't have to deal with that. But yeah, in general, I mean, he hasn't had a home run yet, so he might be due. I guess my final, verdict on Nick Castellanos is, if he hits one deep, find the nearest shelter you can, hole up, tell your family you love them, and just pray for the best. Yeah. But overall, I'm not sure if that's going to happen, because he's really struggled this year. I think that this year just might be... I don't think that this is a continued thing for Castellanos, but I do think that this year is just a lost year for him. And I'm not sure if there's that much he can bring back from it. But Kyle Tucker, he's also kind of struggled in the playoffs. 634 OPS. He does have a home run. But I think overall, I trust his talent a little more. I think my big hot take earlier this year was that he was the best player on the Astros after Correa left. Yordan immediately just called me a dumbass and proved that he could do it even a little bit in the field, which was my one hang-up that allowed me to pick Tucker over Alvarez. But I do think that overall, I'm still a big Kyle Tucker guy, and I think that, unfortunately, because this is something that going into the season you would have said, oh, Kyle Tucker versus Nick Castellanos, that's a fun matchup. But I think it's pretty solidly in Kyle Tucker's favor.
Yep, I'm gonna, same thing, low conversation, only gonna pick Kyle Tucker out of this one. The only thing I do want to say actually harkens back to the Brandon Marsh thing, and the wetness factor may actually go in Brandon Marsh's favor. Just always keeping water in his hair. So maybe that plays for him.
There was a great story by Cespedes Family Barbecue. I believe it was Jake, but I'm gonna say both just in case, Jake and Jordan, on the wetness of Brandon Marsh. And it's very funny that he just kind of embraces it, and it's like a way to lock himself into the game, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like athletes are weird like that. Like earlier in the postseason with Joe Musgrove putting Icy Hot on his ears to keep himself locked in. I think that that's just like a weird thing that athletes do.
I do it during work to keep me awake. But
Icy Hot on the ears, or do you just like spray water on yourself?
Both.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, on to DH, which, once again, this one's not going to be much of a discussion, but it will be in the Phillies' favor this time, I'm assuming. Bryce Harper versus Trey Mancini, unless you want to be the guy that's going to give the contrarian take of the year and say that he'd rather Trey Mancini over Bryce Harper. Mancini is an amazing dude. I kind of wish the Mets had got him at the deadline, but he has struggled in very limited time, both in the playoffs and during the season, just because I don't think that there was much of a role for him on this team, especially if they were not going to, if they weren't going to take Yuli Gurriel out of his spot at first. There really wasn't much of a time for him to really come in and play. But I mean, Trey Mancini does not have a hit in the playoffs. Yeah. He has a walk, right, but
I think the most conversation that we have on this is, Bryce might be the best player in this series. I don't know. That might be a hot take.
I would agree. I think I would agree in this. I think that Bryce Harper is definitely the best player in the series. There's, I mean, the closest case I think you have is Yordan, but I mean, just with what he's been doing heading into the series, Bryce is absolutely the pick here, I would say. He's batting .419, a slugging of .907. We've been saying 900, 800 OPSs for the players is like a good thing, and he's slugging 900. So 1351 OPS, just an unreal postseason run that I think is going to be remembered by baseball for a long time. I don't think that there's much else to say there. It's pretty easily Bryce, and I think that that's super cool. And I'm excited to see just how well he can keep that going in this playoffs. So we're going to get to the pitching now. So for starting pitching, I think that this is another interesting one because I think that the Phillies have the star power with Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler up at the top of that rotation. Rangers Suarez is also very good. But I do think that Houston has a deeper rotation and a lot more pitching that they can go to. And we saw that in the playoffs. So this is, well, so I guess I'm going to spoil my pick a little bit and say that I'm going to go with the Astros here. Because, and my big thing is that in game four, if you're not going to go Wheeler or Nola on short rest, there's a question, there's a big time question of who you go to. They went to Noah Syndergaard in the DS, and he was good, but it was only for three innings, and you have to bullpen that game. And then they went for Bailey Falter in the NLCS, and he was not good. Didn't get out of the first inning. They had to bullpen that game regardless. So I think, regardless, the rotation you're seeing from both sides is Verlander, Framber Valdez, Lance McCullers, sorry, and Christian Javier for the four for Houston. Christian Javier could be a low-end playoff team's two, or maybe even, you know, a middle-of-the-pack 80-win team's ace. And he's their four starter. So I think that that goes up against Wheeler and Nola have the star power and Suarez is good, but that fourth spot is really where it gets me. Even if you go like Wheeler on short rest, which I don't think they would because he's hurt. I mean, he's still coming off of that injury. They would probably go Nola, but even then on short rest, I would probably take the Astros rotation over them.
Yep, I agree exactly with what you're saying. I think that even though you got Verlander on the side of the Astros, who is probably the better pitcher of all of them, I don't know actually, but Nola and Wheeler just, you know, is such a good star power element. But then after that, you really have to question. And like you said, you know, unless the Phillies, you know, win three games right away, and then they can kind of afford to kind of push a little bit and lose a few games and then get back, which I don't think you can ever afford to lose games in a World Series. But if you could theoretically, I guess, afford to lose two and then get Nola or Wheeler on more days rest, then maybe it works in their favor. But I just think, like you said, that the Astros are just deeper and that's going to come into factor, you know. You have Javier McCullers. I've always loved McCullers, and I think McCullers is a great person against this Philly team. So I don't know. I think it's just going to be interesting to kind of see these people play off against each other. But I'm going Astros too.
Definitely, and I think Verlander is actually pretty interesting. I don't have a full gauge on him right now because against the Mariners, he got kind of hit around. Replaced early in the game, and that could have just been a thing where the Mariners had seen him a lot, so they knew, you know, what was coming, had to hop on him early. And then in the Yankees start, he did finish with six innings. I don't think he gave up he gave up the home run to Bader, but he struck out 11 and in general was pretty solid. But for the first couple innings, it was really shaky there. So I think that the Phillies offense in their state right now, which how they've been, they could be another candidate to hop on Verlander, but even then, regardless, I would go with this rotation just because of how deep it is. And that's going to lead into the bullpen as well, which I think once again goes to Houston's favor just because of, once again, how deep it is. I mean, you look at some of these guys that have only gotten one or two appearances, and it's Luis Garcia, who pitched five innings and completely just dominated the Mariners in game three of the NLDS, and he hasn't pitched since. He just came in once, gave five dominant innings, and left. And he's just, and that's like your guy, your breaking case of emergency. Him and Jose Urquidy are like your breaking case of emergency people. Ryan Stanek, who had like a sub 1.75 ERA in the season, has made two appearances this postseason. Just because of the absolute like spoils that this team has in the bullpen. Brian Abreu has been a workhorse for them. It has been pretty damn good. Ryan Pressly is their closer, and he's got four saves. You know, hasn't blown a save yet. I don't believe. Oh, it would be hard to blow a save when he didn't lose a single game. Ryan Pressly has been good. Mets legend Rafael Montero, who has found himself over the last couple of years as a reliever and has been pretty solid. And this is actually kind of a fun one because it's Hector Neris's return to it's Hector Neris's return to Philadelphia. And he's the only reliever in this whole entire bullpen that has an ERA over 2. He's one of 3 pitchers in the entire Houston pitching staff that has an ERA over 2. So I think that's going to be super fun to watch. You wonder how much longer they can keep it this consistent, but I think that they just have such a deep bullpen. Whereas Phillies, I would say it's more top heavy. You have Sir Anthony Dominguez and Jose Alvarado, who they've been riding a lot during this postseason. Jose Alvarado's appeared in 8 games, 8 innings. Sir Anthony Dominguez, 6 games for 7 2/3 innings. And then down the list, it's just kind of, a collection of guys like Brad Hand, David Robertson, Zach Eflin, who was their closer for a little bit, oddly. And then other just guys like Andrew Bellotti and Connor Brogdon. David Robertson was their big pickup at the deadline, and he hasn't done too much. He's appeared in about 4 games and has been pretty solid. But otherwise, it's basically just kind of been Jose Alvarado and Sir Anthony Dominguez. So,
yeah, I think you got it there. I mean, it's very difficult to only lean on 2 guys. And I think what you said about the Astros now, some might say that it's difficult to have guys just take that much rest during series, and what you're talking about, Luis Garcia and stuff. But I don't know. I think that with your bullpen, you want as much variety and as many arms as you can get out of there. And I just think that they have those arms, and also Brian Abreu's pitched well. You even have, like you said, Montero, Neris, Presley's been amazing. Stanek's been good. So I just don't see how the Astros don't have that there.
Yeah. So, that's just kind of the thing about the series, is that it's another one of those series is where the Astros, I feel, are completely overmatching their opponent, but it's another. Astros series against the middling, around 90 win team, NL East team, who we've seen they've had problems with. So I think that's kind of how these previews go, and that's the wrinkle in this series, is that I think the Astros are pretty clearly the better team. I think they've showed it all year. I think they've showed it in these playoffs. But Philly has the chaos factor. Philly has momentum, but Philly has they have the juice right now. They just kind of have it going. They have a lot of their stuff clicking right now and figured out. And I think that sometimes that's just what you need to win 4 times in a 7-game series. But I guess overall, what is your final pick on the Houston Astros versus Philadelphia Phillies World Series?
God, all right. This is bad because I've been wrong every single time already. But so why not just add another one? I'm going chaos here. I'm going to go Phillies. And the big reason why is I've seen a few tweets and stuff like that. It's exactly what you just said. I wish I could find the tweet so I could attribute it, but it's the Astros are the samurai with the katana, and the Phillies are just some random dude with a machete
saw this one.
Just charging as fast as he can.
I also wish that we had who tweeted that, because that was a funny tweet. I did remember seeing that.
Yeah, it's just like you have those. You also have the other one where it's like the Astros are just this like maniacal baseball warehouse, workhouse of like just excellence. And then you have the Phillies that are the team that can't read, so they blow through the caution sign. I don't see, it's just so, momentum's such an interesting thing to me, and even though it's very hard because the Astros have not lost a freaking game yet, but the Astros also have looked a little kind of just kind of middling there and stuff, and the Phillies have risen to the occasion every single time. So I don't think that this is a crazy one, but I and I'm probably wrong, but I'm gonna go Phillies here.
I think the Astros finally get over the ghost of the NL East and finally get a win against an NL East team in the World Series, and they bring home a World Series. I don't know. Because the thing is that we mention them not playing too well, but even still, they haven't played too well, and they've gone 7-0. Yep. Like, they haven't even kind of unlocked what this team can really do, and they still have not lost a single game in the playoffs yet. So, I don't know. I think it's... My final prediction is Astros in six. I think that Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler both get two starts in the series, and they win a Nola and a Wheeler start. And I think, overall, I just think that the Astros are the better team. And obviously, as we've seen in this playoffs, being the better team is not always the qualifier for winning a playoff series. Sometimes you just have to be the better team that played better. But I do...
I don't think the Phillies have been the better team in any series that they've played.
Yeah. But I think that it kind of ends here. And I mean, it's not even a season you can make fun of, really, if you're looking to hate on the Phillies. It's way more than any of them could have imagined. It's just been a great season. But I think it does end here. Well, I guess it would have ended regardless at the end of the series. But that's a little bit too well, actually, of me. But I think it comes to an end here, and I pick the Astros to win in six. So, it's kind of sucks. I'm a little sad to see baseball end, so soon, probably within the next week or two. And I'm a little sad to see that it's ending in a fashion of us having to yet again watch a team that we consider a bitter rival. But, I'm going to excitedly watch the series. I think that is going to be incredibly fun.
Yeah. I think just on that, we had this conversation the other day while playing Vidya games. I am unfortunately on the other side of it, where I just cannot wait till this freaking season is done. Just because, and it's mainly a New York Metropolitans thing. I'm still really upset with how the Mets season fared, and I'm really nervous about how the off season is going to play. So I just want it to start, you know. Also, we're both Celtics fans, so watching basketball is fun during the winter.
Yeah.
You know, so at least we got that. Although they looked terrible against Chicago the other day, but we're not going to talk about that.
Whatever.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of just ready for this to be done. And I don't want the Phillies to win, but I think they're going to, but I don't want them to, because then it's just going to be another NL East team that's won instead of us, and then the freaking Marlins are going to win next year. Then
please don't put that in. They hired Skip Schumacher as their manager today, actually.
Oh, look at that.
It's so... I'm not going to go too long on this because we should end this podcast very soon, but it is kind of crazy to start seeing players that you knew you like played with in MLB 06 The Show get jobs as managers. Like Craig Counsell, I always thought was the funny one. Watching him get a job in the majors and actually being like a really, really good manager. But yeah, I enough on that point. You can't really analyze manager decisions right now. So yeah, I think that does it for episode 3 of the Ball 5 podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Let us know, who do you think is going to steal the face and get us all a free taco? Let us know who's your decision. Let us know who you got picked. And yeah. If you have a copy of Silent Hill 2 on PS2, please DM me. I'll pay for it. I will. I won't pay what they're paying on Amazon, but I will pay to get a copy of Silent Hill 2 on PS2. So if you know a guy, let me know. But I guess that does it for me. Do you got any closing thoughts?
No, just get me out of this season.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're probably going to do another episode during the series. So not just yet. I'm going to need you to stick around as my co-host for just a little bit longer. I once again hope you guys enjoyed, and I hope we can see you around for the next one.
See y'all.